welcome to the Green 19 Podcast. I'm Dominique Yates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. The Packers start the season 2-0 for the first time since 2020, winning 27-18 against the Washington Commanders. So definitely an impressive start to beat the Lions and to beat the Commanders. Two games in 5 days. And Spoon, I guess the two things that stood out to me from this game was, besides the play of Tucker Kraft, once again the defense. A team in Commanders that had 220 rushing yards in week one. They have 51 in this game. It was a tough game for Jaden Daniels. You know, just what did you see from the Packers defense?
Well, Micah Parsons changes so much. He's playing with a lot of fire in his pants right now. And he wants to, obviously, you know, live up to his contract and all the hype and all that kind of stuff. And you can just see he's just blasting through people. And that changes a lot. But it's not the only thing, you know. I mean, they've got – you can see that their aggressiveness, their speed, all of that has changed. So, you know, anytime a guy – dumps a ball off or checks down, they're all over it. You know, I can't think of how many or count how many times a guy got a check down last year and broke through and got a first down, yeah. You know, and it just doesn't happen or hasn't happened a lot. So, yeah, their defense is playing at a very, very high level, maybe elite level.
Yeah. It harkens to what Jeff Hafley said last week about his favorite thing when he's watching film is to pause it at the end of the play and see 11 helmets in the frame. And in two games now, you've seen that a lot. I asked Jeff Hafley how many times you see that watching the Lions film, and he said more than I've ever seen it since he's been here. I would imagine it was probably pretty similar tonight. And to your point, Spoon, it's not all Micah Parsons. Now, it's a lot of Micah Parsons, but it's not all Micah Parsons. Rashawn Gary sacked tonight. Micah Parsons on the sideline. I'm pretty sure Lucas Van Ness's tackle for loss, which was really good recognition to crash down the line as quick as he did it, Micah Parsons on the sideline. They've got Edger and Cooper. Keyshawn Nixon is certainly helped by Micah Parsons because it's easier to cover when you've got Micah Parsons rushing. But the way he played the ball was Keyshawn Nixon. It was a lot of studs out there. I think we should take a step back, though, and contextualize these two games real quick, because it's pretty easy to recognize what it's not. It's not a trophy. It doesn't mean anything for the next 15 games. But I've been on the beat since 2014. Spoon, you've been on the beat much longer than that. I was thinking, this is the fourth time since 2014 they started 2-0, 2015, 2019, 2020, and now. And 2015, that was 2-0. 2-0 is good, but I think we all kind of knew, okay, they just lost Jordy Nelson the preseason, torn ACL. They're going to have to figure that out. 2019, 2-0, first two games of Matt LaFleur's head coaching career. But the offense was, if you remember, really still trying to get untracked in their first year in that offense. 2020, before now, I would say was the most impressive 2-0 start. They started at the Vikings in that first COVID game, and they had against the Lions. Both those teams, though, finished the season with a losing record that year. If you came into this season thinking the Lions and Commanders were primary contenders in the NFC, as I was, the only way that you could be less impressed by this start is if you think that the Lions and Commanders might not be that good, which
is a possibility.
I still kind of think they're going to be pretty good. I think they're two playoff teams. I think the Lions and the Commanders will be in the 7th seed NFC playoff field. I don't know how cream of the crop contendery they're going to be, but this is to not just to beat them, but to whack them like that at home. This is, since I've been on the beat in 12 seasons, their most impressive two-game start to a season, and it's really not close. What I'm curious, Spoon, is when's the last time you've seen this team start two games, because it's not since 2014. I know that much.
Yeah, 2010. I don't remember how they started.
Well, they're the sixth seed, right?
Yeah.
That season.
Yeah. I mean, but that's because they kept getting injuries as the season wore on. They had a ton of injuries that year. I mean, my memory's so bad, but in 1996, when they won the Super Bowl, they just rolled over everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was they had the number one defense in the NFL. And I remember Ray Rhodes brought his team in here. I think that was 96. And they just beat them like, and it was a good Philly team. And they beat them like 42-0. And that was a team that you just, right from the start, as soon as they start playing, they steamrolled everybody. I don't know that this team is going to steamroll everybody, but I'm pretty sure they'll beat Cleveland.
Yeah.
I think they got a good chance to beat Dallas down there.
Yeah.
Then they got Cincinnati. You know, that'll be a tough one.
They can win against anyone and lose against anyone, the Bengals.
Yeah, like, I mean, they're going to be favored. And,
yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
pretty much every game yeah. up until they play, what, Pat?
Philly, maybe?
Yeah, it's Philly before Thanksgiving or after?
I think it's right before Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Okay, so then, and then Ravens is after, I think.
It is.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe all the way up until they play the Lions again. I don't know. Unless Minnesota turns out to be, you know, pretty good, that might be the next time that they're not favored.
And I see, I think, essentially a rookie quarterback against that pass rush. Packers going to be favored in that game, too.
Yeah. It's unique. We joked about it in the press box during the game, and I was like, I wonder how Jeff Hafley's feeling that we will not have to ask questions about the pass rush, at least in a negative light, throughout this season, because you kind of did mention Parsons' impact, but you can just definitely sense it. And you can just see the energy coming from everyone on the field and everybody in the backfield and or on the back end. You know, we talked to Xavier McKinney in the locker room. It's just all these guys are kind of feeding off of that energy right now and just kind of took advantage in this game against the Commanders. And, again, that's why they're 2-0.
The one thing they don't have are interceptions, you know, and turnovers.
Yeah.
Have they forced any fumbles? Remember, that was supposed to be such a big thing, and they haven't done that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to come into play at some point, but maybe it'll just take some time. But that would be the one thing you'd point to on the defense and say, you know, they haven't done that.
I'm going to take the opposite. I get in the big picture, takeaways are important. I'm not diminishing it. But I thought what was impressive tonight was that they, until the end, shut them down and didn't have to rely on the takeaway. I mean, they just flew. They made them earn every single yard. Late in the game, they were averaging like, what, 3.9 yards per play?
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is a sign of a really good defense. Because I do believe with this pass rush that takeaways will come. Usually they're tied to pass rush, and I don't think we have any questions right now on the Packers' pass rush. So they're going to come. But when you can shut down a Jaden Daniels offense – in 22 career starts counting playoffs, this was tied for the fewest points the Commanders have scored with Jaden Daniels at quarterback.
Yeah.
Twice last year, they scored 18 points. Once, they needed a Hail Mary to do it against Chicago.
Yeah.
The other time was against the Eagles.
Yeah.
That's pretty good defense, Philadelphia.
Yeah, and I don't want to diminish. Well, I'm saying it's like when, you know, you say, I don't want to say you're ugly, but you're really ugly. You know, I don't want to say the corners are benefiting from having that pass rush, but the corners are benefiting from
that. Oh, of course they are. Yes, that's football.
They would tell you that.
Rush. Yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't hear that so much. But, you know, they can play more aggressively.
Yeah.
You know, they seem to be playing more aggressively. How many times did Daniels throw balls that weren't even close to the receiver? Because... He's got guys just coming at him. And pretty after a while, you start seeing the color coming at you. And, you know, it triggers you to just get rid of the ball.
Yeah.
And the wide receivers for Washington did nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, until Debo at the end got a garbage touchdown.
Yeah.
McLaurin's a really good receiver. He didn't do anything. Noah Brown got hurt after a while. Zach Ertz was the only guy who hurt him.
Mm-hmm. I think that's, go ahead.
I get why you approach that delicately, but I don't think you need to. Like, let's not pretend like that's a bad thing for corners to benefit from your pass rush. That's what every defense in the league wants, to set up a situation like that. By the way, you guys know the last time the Packers defense has given up a 100-yard wide receiver?
Was it Brazil?
It was.
Yeah.
So we're talking more than a full season now. Now, Jonnu Smith with the Dolphins had 100 yards, tight end, last November. Mm. But the corners don't predominantly cover tight ends. We're talking about corner play. It's been more than a full season now since they've given up a 100-yard wide receiver.
Man.
They're fine. I said it all offseason. They're fine at corner. And now they're really fine at corner because they got that pass rush. And, yeah, it helps.
Yes. It's fascinating. It is just kind of watching those guys fly around. And I guess the thing that does stand out, it's only the second game. Has Micah Parsons been here in 2 weeks yet? Has it even been like 14?
2 weeks today was the trade.
So the trade happened.
All right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
I was like, I didn't even think about it.
The world has changed in 14 days.
Oh, God.
I know, right?
That is,
Micah Parsons asked after the game, this is the craziest 2-week span of your life? He's like, yeah. It is.
It had to be.
Right.
But that's something that I just also can't even wrap my head around. Like, he still is just getting here, and he's already just in the mix like this, making such an impact, and so many guys.
Well, you can start to see that. Halfley is starting, you know, the ball is rolling on how to use him because he rushed him up the middle. I thought they had a really good game plan, which was try to pressure him up the middle, but make sure those two ends don't let him get outside. They did not let him get outside very often.
Yeah.
And the pressure up the middle was so great that he couldn't even get through the middle either.
Yeah. You saw Micah Parsons line up tonight at left and right end, at defensive tackle, at linebacker. Now, we have to be very careful when we discern which position he's lined up in, because when he's got his hand in the ground, he's a defensive tackle on the inside. When he's standing up, he's a linebacker. It'd be the same spot, but it's a different position. In 5 days, he's played 80 snaps, played 50 tonight, played 30 against the Lions. By my count, he had 7 pressures tonight, 4 quarterback hits. One of those was a half sack. He drew 3 penalties. In 2 games, he's got 10 pressures, a sack and a half. He's forced an interception with a pressure. I can't remember if he drew a penalty against the Lions or not, but he drew 3 tonight. And after the game, he was asked about the snap count, and that's literally the only thing he's grown tired of. Although I did see hands on the hips late in the game.
Oh, yeah.
I did see hands on the hips, which, I mean, forgive him. He had no training camp. He's played 80 snaps in 5 days and had all that production. But he made it seem pretty clear that coming out of this mini bye now, he's going to be pretty close to full go.
It is pretty remarkable. He's doing all that with a bad back, right, Spoon?
Yeah, with that epidural, it's they got
get him waiting, a walking cane,
waiting in the training room.
That's so true. But yeah, I mean, again, I'm still fascinated to see what we're talking about with this defense in just a couple weeks from now, just a month from now, because you already see what they're doing right now. And again, this is with 2 weeks of Parsons here, and they're still, you know, even you throw like some of those D tackles, like Kobe Wooden is continually getting those snaps. Devontae Wyatt is still getting those snaps. Carl Brooks. So there's so many guys that are contributing right now. And again, you're seeing it. You also saw Nate Hobbs make his debut for the Packers, and he got a few snaps as well.
We talked about after the trade how the Packers won because they didn't have to get Rashawn Gary. Can you imagine Brian Gutekunst's thought bubble also? We haven't talked about this, but Brian Gutekunst's thought bubble being like, oh, you want Kenny Clark, not Devontae Wyatt? You want Kenny Clark. Because you're talking about two defensive tackles in very different places in their career. And I'm not knocking Kenny Clark, but he's 30 years old. Devontae Wyatt has sacks in his first two games. Devontae Wyatt told me before the season he wants double-digit sacks. I'm not saying he's going to get double-digit sacks. I'll say that Rashawn Gary's going to get double-digit sacks. I'm not going to say that about Devontae Wyatt.
I'll say why Devontae Wyatt has a better chance than Rashawn Gary.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to say Rashawn Gary, but I'm not going to say Devontae Wyatt's not going to get double-digit sacks either. I mean, he looks really explosive.
Yeah.
I go back to Brian Gutekunst's thought process of you want a defensive tackle, Cowboys, and it's not Devontae Wyatt. Okay.
Yeah, that's so true. So they're kind of doing the job right now, and like I said, it really does stand out. As far as offensively, it's so unique, again, to say like they scored 27 points, but still left a lot of points out there on the field. Even without two starting offensive linemen in Banks and Zach Tom, they went through the rotation with Anthony Belton and Darren Kennard. Basically, both guys were getting a series apiece. And Spoon, I thought it was fascinating. You said, I think someone told you in the blog, on the two 90-plus yard scoring drives, Kennard was playing in that tackle. Yeah. And Belton, it's kind of a lot of what you saw in preseason with the penalties, some holding penalties and things like that.
Well, you have one holding penalty.
Yeah, the one holding penalty.
I don't know. I couldn't focus on them, so I'm curious to see if he gave up any pressures or anything. But
gave up a sack.
Jordan, he gave up a sack.
Yeah, he did. At least a half sack. Yeah, because it might have been split because there was pressure coming from the backside as well.
Okay.
But yeah, he was riding. It was like a bull rush.
Yeah.
But they gave up two sacks. Is that right for the game?
Yeah, one of those was.
And one of those was that bootleg
where they took it.
Took the sack. Mm-hmm. So protection has not been a problem through the two games. Run blocking has, but it's very interesting that teams are just ganging up on Josh Jacobs. I mean, there were times Washington had like 9-10 guys up at the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. And, they were crashing their linebackers. And, when they have Zach Tom and they have Aaron Banks, they'll be able to run it a little better.
Yeah.
Against those kind of fronts. But it was a good test for Love. I didn't think he passed it with flying colors. He had a lot of one-on-ones. There were some one-on-ones that they should have won. But when he had to make a play, he made some nice plays. He made some nice throws.
Yeah. And that's honestly, though, the key. The more that they continually build, like those guys, they win their one-on-ones. You're going to start seeing the defense back up a little bit and kind of take pressure off the box, and then you'll get to see the run game more. And that was one of the things LaFleur kind of talked about in his press conference. But he said you got to keep running the ball. Like, you got to have that balance in the pass and run game. So it's going to be interesting as far as what things look like in the passing game, in particular without Jaden Reed, as LaFleur announced that he broke his collarbone. On that play, it was a 39-yard play with the Anthony Belton holding, and he broke his collarbone on that play. He made the catch, but it didn't matter because of the penalty. Just thoughts on the impact on not having Jaden Reed in this offense, and what you're kind of looking to see from the receiver group.
Well, I don't want to downplay it, but you've got the book in front of you, Spoon. How many targets caught a pass tonight? It was 10 against the Lions.
Yeah, it wasn't quite that many. I think 7 targets, 6 guys caught passes.
Yeah, and like 5 of them had 3. Tucker Kraft's talking about the offense after the game tonight. He said, you might as well call us the five-headed dragon. I mean, there are so many weapons in this passing attack that they're going to spread the ball around. So it's Jaden Reed is one of their better weapons. He is also barricaded with a lot of depth there. And so you're taking one more weapon off the field, which you never want to do, but it's going to happen over the course of an NFL season. I wonder if some of this, it's not a season ender, so that helps. I wonder if some of this is a blessing in disguise. The rest is foot some.
Yeah.
You want him to come back late in the year. To be able to contribute to the playoff push at this point, right? I mean, that's the thing. But
It also opens a spot for Christian Watson without having to cut a receiver, too.
That's a very good point. Yeah, I hadn't considered that yet. I don't want to gloss over, though. You know, you said the even with Aaron Banks and Zach Tom off the field, there was missed opportunities. I'm not sure it was because Aaron Banks and Zach, I mean, you're talking a top five paid left guard and right tackle that they didn't have tonight. Let's be very clear. That is very significant. Mm-hmm. It's not just 60% of your starting offensive line, although Matt LaFleur considers Jordan Morgan a starter. Right. I'm not sure I consider Jordan Morgan a starter at guard. At left tackle, I might, but I don't know. It's not been the same results on the interior as it's been at left tackle. It's not just 60%. It's two of the higher paid guys at their positions in the league that have a pretty good opener.
Basically $165 million, which is what Micah Parsons is. So you're just Micah Parsons off of the offense.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's a big part of it. I mean, I think that's more significant than not having Jaden Reed, is not having those two guys.
Yeah, but they made it through it against a decent defense. Mm-hmm. You know, like the Packers, what the difference was, so Josh Connerly Jr. is the Washington's number one first-round draft pick. He's their right tackle. And the Packers abused him at times. And, you know, it's not his fault. He's going against Micah Parsons and Rashawn Gary. But that didn't happen for the Packers. It wasn't like guys were running right through those Belton and Diller and Kennard, and Morgan. So, you know, it turns out that maybe it's not the end of the world. They need Zach Tom and Aaron Banks back. Right. Zach Tom, by the way, said that he's got a torn oblique muscle, which he doesn't know how long that'll keep him out. But he worked out before the game, just said it was too painful. So that's something to keep an eye on. I don't know how long oblique muscles take to.
It's a good thing he's not a pitcher.
Yeah.
In baseball, right. That'd be a big problem. Too,
yeah.
It's true.
But he's a key. I mean, he and Banks are probably their two best run blockers, too. You know?
I don't. Well, I guess I know the answer to this, but I don't still understand. With how Darian Kennard played in 15 snaps to close the Lions game, with how he played tonight, why you rotate with Anthony Belton. Now, I'm not dumping on Anthony Belton. He's a second-round pick. He is massive. He is athletic and long-term. When you look at Elton Jenkins started his career with rotating with Lane Taylor. Sean Ryan took 2 years, and now he's starting right guard. It takes time for those guys, but it takes time for those guys. And Darian Kennard's had time in this league, and he played pretty well in the opener. He played well again tonight. I'm not sure that I'm understanding the rotation. The answer is that they liked what they saw from Anthony Belton in practice. But
that's true. Now, what did they see in practice this week? Nothing.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. That's a very good point.
Nothing.
Yeah.
So I don't understand it. I mean, maybe you can help me understand the spoon.
Is it just
depth? Why rotate?
Just getting the young guy reps.
That's what I think it is.
Yeah.
I think they think at some point, you know, Belton might have to play, and he's a second-round pick.
Yeah.
The other guys, you know, they traded a sixth for him. I think you got to get him on the field at some point, and now's the time to do it. Do it early in the season, so Casey, you need him later.
If it was the Cleveland Browns, I'd get that. It didn't hurt him tonight,
right?
But this was a fairly significant, tough opponent, big game, even for early in the season that could have late season playoff implications. That I don't know that tonight was the time to do it. Now, it didn't hurt him, so who cares? It's just, that was something that really surprised me.
I didn't study Kennard's play against the Lions, but maybe he did some things they didn't like. I mean, maybe he missed some assignments or something. But they did play him.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell the difference when they were when they were in there. I never knew who was in there. So that's a good thing. And I think, you know, they had some instances where, you know, they got blitzed and the protection didn't really hold up. Like you're also like, where's the outlet, you know, mm-hmm. for these blitzes? And so I think LaFleur said they had some protection errors on some of those blitzes. But in bottom line was he only got sacked twice.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. He's kind of been getting into a rhythm, no question about that. But as a follow-up, I talked around about it a minute ago. Want to get your thoughts, too, just on the dynamic at receiver.
Yeah.
And just the passing game without Reed right now.
I'm a little more alarmed by Reed being gone just because he plays like a veteran. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he wins his one-on-ones. You know, like we saw Dobbs win that slant route, you know, early on, like down at the goal line, and him and running a slant is a slam dunk most of the time. But then, you know, he had a one-on-one where he's crossing across the middle and he just couldn't separate. And that's the kind of thing that I think Reed does. He got open on that one in the corner and then made just an unbelievable catch. And I think they're going to miss that. And I don't know who makes up for that. I don't think Golden's ready to do that.
That's it.
You know, Wicks has looked good. He hasn't dropped any passes.
Yeah.
He's a good route runner. He gets open. But I just don't know if they have that dynamic guy that Reed is.
I think the most alarming part of this with Jaden Reed is that he is an undersized guy. And he ended the season injured, dislocated shoulder.
Yeah.
He's already injured again this season. You hope every player holds up, but you know that not every player does.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have to wonder. That's also why I think that it could be a blessing in disguise to rest his body a little bit, get him right, because he is a veteran, because he plays like that. I think he is a guy that can miss 2 months and come back and still contribute later in the year. It's not like he's a young guy that's going to really have this be a setback. But that he's undersized, and you want his body to hold up.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we're seeing Savion Williams play. Mm-hmm. Because they're definitely want to get him involved. And yeah. I think they think he's the kind of guy when December comes around, you know, and it's cold and he can run through some people if he can keep his feet. You know, I think they want to develop him fast.
Yeah.
You know, and Golden, you know, I wonder about his – I talked about it before. Yeah. I wonder about his size, too. Yeah.
That's true. That's why it was fascinating, especially in this game. I know they did a little bit with Savion in the Lions game, but they were doing a lot of those sweeps, like those jet sweeps with Golden, with Savion, just to try to get them in space and get them the ball. And I'm pretty sure right now Savion is second on the team in rushing yards behind Josh Jacobs just because a couple of those those carries that he had. I was looking up those things.
I was surprised that did Emmanuel Wilson have a rush tonight?
No, I think just a special teams.
I was surprised they didn't just throw him in there for 3 or 4 carries just to one, save Josh Jacobs a little bit and just kind of give a change up.
Chris Brooks is their guy now.
Yeah,
they like Chris
Brooks.
They're
really high on him.
They do. Like, they really do like him. As far as we wrap things up, as far as we talked about some concerns or questions or something that I can't kind of get over, if there's something with this Packers team right now that if you look up, I'm like, man, that could just come back and haunt them. It's been the play of special teams right now. Yeah.
There's well, before we move on to special teams, let's talk about Tucker Kraft.
Go ahead.
He's their number one target, and tonight was the night he arrived. And I'm curious. I asked him this question in the locker room after, but I'm going to ask you guys first before I give you the answer. He has 6 catches tonight. Which one stood out to you the most?
Probably the 17-yarder where he had, like, the stiff arm and got some yak after mm-hmm. that. And I think he got him into the red zone.
Tucker Kraft said that he should have hurdled the defender on the sideline
on that play
at the end of that play because he thinks he would have scored a touchdown. I went back and saw that. I think that he'd have to be Superman. He would have to be leaping tall buildings to have gotten the hurdle on that one. So I'm not sure I'm sold on that, but that was his thought on that play. What about you, Spook?
So, yeah, I'd go with that one. But what I was going to do was pat myself on the back because Matt LaFleur obviously must read everything I write.
Of course he does.
Because my lead on the five things was how badly they were ignoring Tucker Kraft, you know, and that you can't just use him to chip on guys all the time. I mean, the guy is a legit receiver.
Yeah.
And he fourth or fifth in the league in yards after the catch last year.
Yeah.
You know, it's just an absolute shame if you're not using that guy to his full extent every game. And so I'm sure LaFleur read that and decided that they better change the game plan, you know,
because well,
he listens to me so often.
I asked Tucker Kraft after the game if there was a particular catch that stood out to him as being particularly emblematic of his journey, his development to this point in his career as a pass catcher. And he said the 8 yard on 3rd and 6 because that was a total package play. He runs through a bear hug, is able to shed that. That's strength. He slips as soon as he sheds it. Slips, he's on the ground, he's on his hands and knees and pops right back up. And then he's able to secure the catch. Like, he puts it all together there. So that was, he said, because of the athleticism he showed on that play, this is a guy who came into the league really as more of a mauling type tight end. He's a huge guy. His blocking was something the Packers really liked and had to develop as a pass catcher. And he showed the athleticism there. For me, it was the 57-yarder because I have lost track going back to last year, saying how many times the Packers need to figure out how to maximize him downfield, but that's not easy to do because he's also foundational to their blocking game. So schematically, how do you do that? And finally, they figured out a way to do that schematically. They come out on a 2nd and 6. They're in 13 personnel, all three tight ends on the field. They have Luke Musgrave on the far right side, Tucker Kraft, and then Darian Kennard at right tackle. So Tucker Kraft is sandwiched between the tackle and Musgrave. Musgrave starts downfield. He pulls both safeties to the middle. And Tucker Kraft said that the defense considers that a double Y set. So the defense, and he heard Washington before the snap, they were expecting a toss to Josh Jacobs. Both linebackers, Quan Martin, Bobby Wagner, bite up on the toss, and that is why Tucker Kraft was so wide open on the second level, because the linebackers take Jacobs, the safeties take Musgrave, and all of a sudden you have a Tucker Kraft targeted 17 yards past the line of scrimmage. He only had 10 of those, 10 targets all last season, where he was 10 yards or more past the line of scrimmage, 10 of his 70. He caught 8 of them for 260 yards, a perfect 158.3 passer rating. That's the type of potential he has down the field, but schematically it's hard to do. I thought it was very significant that they figured out how to schematically open him up down the field for 57 yards.
Yeah, I'd say the key, too, was that play action was so dangerous because all you got to do, if they bite, hesitate, take a step forward. That was also like on the 8 yard touchdown that Love threw to Kraft in the end zone. He got them to bite just a little bit, and he was just wide open. Like good things happen when you can run that play action.
And you know, they finally found excuse me, a little bit of combination with him and Musgrave. I mean, on the blog, someone asked me about Musgrave, and I basically said if he can make one play every game, you know, one 20-yard catch or something like that, then they're getting their money's worth for him. If he can make two, you know, great. That's even better. He had two catches for 32 yards, a 23-yarder and a 9-yarder. But, yeah, I mean, if those two guys are in the game together, it changes a lot.
Because what he is right now is a number two tight end. How many number two tight ends can give you one 20-yard catch a game? I mean, it's just not very many around the league, many offenses that have that.
Yeah.
One last thing about Tucker Kraft. It wasn't to me the six catches for 124 yards on 7 targets and the touchdown, second straight game with a touchdown. It wasn't just the numbers. It was the fact that he caught a pass in pretty much every situation, all areas of the field. He caught him on first down. He caught him on third down. He caught him to move the chains. He caught a touchdown. Mm-hmm. He caught a pass on both goal lines. The first reception he had tonight was very vintage, a little check down to the left flat from their 4-yard line. He stretches into 15 yards. We've seen him make that play over and over and over again. The touchdown, very vintage. It was a leak. He made a living on leaks last year. Mm-hmm. He said that he knew before the snap that it was going to be a touchdown because Will Harris, the safety, had cheated all the way up to the line of scrimmage. So he just, I mean, it was the perfect timing for that type to take advantage of that type of anticipation. He caught it deep. He caught it short. When you have a tight end that can do all those things in the passing game and he's your classic inline blocker and blocks the way he does, that's when you start to talk about having one of the better tight ends in the league.
Yeah. So as we wrap it up, again, as I mentioned, special team, that's a concern.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, those penalties are just ridiculous.
They are.
What makes you wonder, you know, what are they teaching?
Yeah.
That these guys keep having holding penalties.
Yeah. Again, not only that, but even some of their run lanes weren't very good. Like, there was the one play they had, like, a helmet to their hands to the face or a holding or something like that. They gave up 15 yards and they gave up a 45 kickoff return run to open up the game. Just a lot of those little things that, again, they can come back to haunt them. You know, McManus missed the field goal to end the half, but whatever. He's been pretty consistent. But that's the special teams is something that is really just a concern too, is, you know, what'd you see from that group and that unit? Does it concern you as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like the Packers are starting on third base with their special teams because they have Brandon McManus, they have Matt Orzech, they have Daniel Whelan. They're really, really solid at the core primary specialist positions.
Yeah.
You can't do a whole lot better than that battery. It shouldn't be this bad. Like, they're in a good position in special teams on paper. It should not be this bad. Now, Brandon McManus obviously misses the 48-yard and then comes back after clanking it off the left upright, comes back and splits it from 56. I mean, I don't think there's any concern there.
No.
Daniel Whelan, I don't know if you have the numbers in front of you, Spoon, but I didn't feel like Daniel Whelan had, you know, they've talked a lot about consistency with him. It wasn't his most consistent night.
53.3 average, not bad, but his net was, he had a touchback, 35.8 net.
That touchback was almost a perfect punt, too. He, like, landed at the one, you know.
Well, I'll say this about special teams. So the guys you have playing are not rookies.
No.
You know, Neiman's not a rookie.
Right, yeah.
Teron Hopper's not a rookie.
Yeah.
Oladapo is not a rookie. Isaiah McDuffie's not a rookie. Bullard. So that whole thing where it used to be all you did was play rookies on special teams does not apply here.
Mm-mm.
So you've got guys who've played quite a bit of special teams, and they're still making mistakes like that. I don't know.
Five words. It shouldn't be that bad.
No. That's well said. Especially because, like I said, it could just come back and haunt him. Like I said, they're fortunate in the way that the defense was so dominant. So, like, the Commanders weren't able to capitalize on some of the special team yards and the penalties that they had. But, like I said, you can run into one of those teams. And, again, as we've seen throughout the year, special teams have haunted the Packers in big games. So, again, you can't – it's an issue.
That's what I was just thinking. Is not like we've ever seen a Packers team before that on paper has very few holes and is sure built like a Super Bowl contender, if not champion, ever be thwarted by special teams. I mean, we've never seen that before.
It's an issue, right? Any final words before we wrap things up? We can go with you, Tom, and then Ryan.
You know, injuries are piling up. Remember, if you play your guys in the preseason, you're not supposed to have any injuries in the early part of the season. Well, they're kind of changing that. But, you know, aside from that, I think they got a chance now. They'll take a little bit of time off, but then they can have another full week of practice, and I think that's going to be good for the defense.
Mm-hmm.
Every time they can practice with Micah Parsons, you know, they just haven't had many practices with him.
Yeah.
The more things they can do, so you know, that'll be something to watch, and so will be. They don't play against each other, but looking ahead to Cleveland, Myles Garrett and Micah Parsons, two of the best defensive players in football. So that'll be something to watch.
It's a good thing that they have the weekend to rest up their offensive line, maybe with Myles Garrett. Not that they should steamroll the Browns. I mean, they really should.
They don't. There's an issue.
Yeah, they really should. So, yeah. But I'm sitting on. I picked them to go 13-4. I picked them to win the Super Bowl, and I have not seen a thing that would make me change my mind there. I think the Lions and Commanders are pretty good. Who knows? We'll see as the season goes on. All right. But and I could be dead wrong because we know nothing after 2 weeks. That's a rule of the NFL season. You know nothing after 2 weeks. But I'm going to stick by it for now. I think the Lions and Commanders are pretty good, and they just bushwhacked them. I mean, they got out to leads of 27-6 against the Lions and 27-10 against the Commanders. And I guess I'll just leave it here. If the Packers are playing from those kind of leads most of their weeks, week in, week out, which
that's a
I don't have much reason to think that they can't right now because they just did it against two teams I think are pretty good. That is just not a losing formula for this team. That's not how you beat the Packers by falling behind like that. Like the only chance you have, you're not coming back on that path. The only chance you have is to get out to leads. If they keep going out to those leads, there's going to be a lot of wins.
That's true. So to start the season 2-0 in this fashion, again, it is impressive for the Packers, and it is a long season, but we talked about all these big games that they had, and getting them at home was another big thing, and they were able to, starting off the year, use the home crowd, use the home game advantage, and again, 2-0 for the first time since 2020. So, guys, that is it for this podcast, and now there will be a little bit of time before hitting the road and heading to Cleveland, and in the meantime, we can, I guess, catch our breath for a little bit after this two games in 5 days, and get ready to hit the road, get in a plane, and go from there.
Leaving on a jet plane. Oh, no, we're not saying. No. Okay.
You're going to get us in trouble for, like, copyright infringement or something like
it's
that.
It's late. Oh, man, if that sounded anything like the real thing.
Yeah, I don't know
not,
what that's on.
That's not copyright right there.
That's right. Let's go get some sleep. But we do thank each and every one of you for checking out the Green 19 podcast. The Packers are 2-0 to start the season once again for the first time since 2020. For Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominique Yates.